This is Will's Band of the Week for November 17th, 2013. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Barrett, live in studio.
Yes.
And Chris, live in studio.
Hola.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, we're all together again.
Incredible.
Aren't people who demand, like, to say foreign words correctly, aren't they annoying? Because they're trying to show off, like, how they say it?
Yes.
Like, when you were with a group of people and ordering dinner, and one person's like, I will take the chimichangas.
Right. That's a little overboard.
It's gotten to be a trend lately, too, right? It used to be totally acceptable to just say things in a dorky American way.
Which was fine.
Who's offended
if you just say, give me the chimichangas?
Yeah.
Nobody.
If foreign people are over here, they don't make the effort to, like, say American words.
No.
With an American accent. They just say it the way they say it.
Right.
If Nicholas Ogburn were in America, he wouldn't speak with an American accent. He'd just say the things the way he says them.
That's right.
You'd think so.
Yeah.
Unless he was trying to sound like the guy from 38 Special.
Yeah.
He does have a pretty good American accent.
Pretty well, yeah. Better than my... I don't really do accents. Do you guys do accents?
I don't.
He kind of gave a look like he sort of does, but not on the air.
I don't want to discredit Nicholas Ogburn at all, but I kind of think the American Southern accent is one of those, like, probably easiest to imitate. Don't you think?
What's funny is, like, when you watch the BBC or something and someone tries to... imitate an American accent, they immediately go to this, like, the Southern accent. Like, they all think we speak with like we're from the South, like we're from Alabama.
Who would ever try to talk like Wisconsin guys?
I don't know.
Yeah, well, people don't know enough to even try.
I think people would think that maybe we, particularly me, sound like I'm from Canada or something, right? I think there's a continuum where people from the northern or north central U.S. sound like Canadians.
Aside from your heavy crack smoking, I don't think people would think you're from Toronto.
Right, other than that, right? that story's gotten pretty crazy. That is nuts.
Hey, in the news.
As much as I think
from the headlines.
You know, I love that city. I love the city of Toronto. And I see this guy. What an oddball to be the representative of this cosmopolitan international city.
And
weird.
They still love him. They're a forgiving lot there in Canada.
Seems like every day there's a new thing, like a new drug that he's taken or something.
What does Anurag have to say about this?
Yeah.
We need to hear from Anurag.
He's from outside of Toronto, but basically from the Toronto metro area, right?
Right.
Closer to Toronto than we are, put it that way.
Yeah, a lot closer. Yeah. Hmm. So we should probably give the backstory here. So, you know, in an effort to get together here tonight, we've been, how do I describe this? We've been like all over the place to converge here.
Right.
So I went out. I was out with my wife, and Chris is going to, he brought a breathalyzer to make sure that we're all okay. So, you know, I had two Kiss the Lips IPAs tonight. That's a good beer from Lake Louis Brewing.
Pints?
Right. Yep. So nice. I'm thinking, okay, I'm still okay for this podcast.
The first base of beers.
And
the lips. What is just, I don't even know what second base is. What's second base? Or is it
can't
too
say that on a
is it too
podcast.
Ribald for the
Yeah.
All right. Before we get to what brought you guys here,
sure.
I will say that my wife struck up a conversation with a guy at the old fashioned today. We're sitting at the bar. And this guy's an engineer named Tim from Denver. Really nice guy. And we're about to leave, and she says, yeah, my husband has to go record this podcast. It's called Will's Band of the Week. You should listen to it. And he's like, oh, I'm going to write this down.
Oh,
so,
no.
So Tim from Denver, if you're listening, yeah, you made the connection. That's pretty cool, right?
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah.
Wow, nice.
Yeah. And he said he's got a buddy who plays with David Crosby. He's like the opening band for David Crosby. So good luck to that guy opening for David Crosby.
So now we're like... 3 degrees from David Crosby.
Right.
All right.
We're close. Okay, so Chris, what brought you here tonight?
My car.
What are the adventures that resulted in you ending up here?
Oh, I just kind of sat around waiting for you to call me to say you were here. Mm-hmm. and I had a beverage before I came over, and I was at, I don't want to buzz market the store, a large outlet store where they push free samples on you a lot.
Yeah.
And is there like a word for a phobia of being made to eat free samples? Because whatever it is, I have it. Like I walk by and I recoil in horror, like I'm looking at somebody being like shot when someone offers me a free sample. But
wait, you don't want to eat the things?
No, I want nothing to do with any free samples. I don't know. They're just gross because they've been sitting out there. Yeah.
No, they go through those things really fast.
Yeah, they go pretty fast.
You
They're
get
pretty
like
fresh.
A little, like a little Geno's pizza roll on a tray.
No,
by the Costco person.
I'm out.
He's wearing gloves.
Yeah, and there's always like a guy like lingering, like trying to grab an extra one too.
No,
yeah,
but here's the thing.
At that's usually me.
It's always like some guy who is like unshaven. He's got a beard, and so they're making him wear that weird beard
Chris
mask.
Is currently Chris yeah, has not bad. Shaved in 2.5 weeks.
He
I'm
needs
guessing.
A beard that's mask.
About 2.5 weeks. So these like beard covers are just disgusting, and it like really freaks me out.
Okay,
I'm sorry. Well, somebody, where were we?
We were with the.
Oh,
what,
so
what
I'm
brought
there,
you here tonight,
and I saw that for. Oh Jesus! I just dropped my phone. All right, I saw for like $15. They had home breathalyzers that you could just carry on your keychain, and I was like, "Oh, that seems like fun." Like when you're out having a drink, it'd be kind of fun to find out like what your BAC is.
Mm-hmm.
May even help you in a legal situation.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I got to the register, and I'm like, only alcoholics buy these things. Like, who are the only people that really need to know at any given point what their blood alcohol content is?
Alcoholics,
drunkards,
and the curious
hobos.
You fall into the latter. You're just a curious person.
Yes, I'm alcohol curious.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it'd be a good party trick. And I think that's what we're going to use it as tonight.
All right, let's set down some baselines
right
here.
Yep. All right, so we'll see where we are now, and then, I don't know, maybe by the end of the night. But I was worried that if we have too many drinks during the podcast, podcasting over the limit is trouble. I think that's illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have to see.
Well, we'll just have to, what can we do?
Okay, I started it, and there's a countdown, and when it gets to one, you have to blow. So it's at 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
All right. That's a great sound effect.
0.06.
Oh.
That can't be right.
No, there's no way. I've had one drink and it's at 0.06. There's no way.
Well, you're holding it upside down. It's actually at 0.9. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm at 0.90.
Let me see what I got here.
All right. There you go. So you press the button, wait for it to count down, and then when it gets... when it gets to zero, then you blow.
I had one beer.
Oh, all right.
At the Plaza about 3 hours ago.
Okay.
So it should be like 0.02 maybe, okay. Right?
Now go.
I just blew a 0.15. Seriously, look at that.
You are not a 0.15 right now.
No. I had one beer. You know, 2.5 hours ago, I did just take a sip of this scotch that you brought over.
Yeah. It's detecting
so
that,
it's
I think.
In my mouth, like, right now.
That could be it.
Well, okay.
Or just like, doing a cumulative thing. Like, together we blew a...
How do you start this thing?
All right. Press this button here, and then when it gets to zero.
All right.
And you want it to be beeping while you're blowing.
All right, here we go.
All right, here we go. Let's make a little small talk while it counts down.
Yeah.
So, what else is going on, Barrett?
That's really not much.
Oh, here we go.
Let's see here he goes.
All right. All right, let's see. 0.17. You wouldn't even be able to stand at 0.17. Maybe it's because you weigh 85 pounds.
That's ridiculous.
Something's wrong with that.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it just gives you an extra high... reading because they don't
for
want people
caution.
Driving around.
Yeah, yeah, that's
might
crazy.
As well make it high. All right, well.
Chris is driving.
Yep, I'm driving us all around.
Well, we can still see what happens. I mean, we're gonna have dangerous levels.
Right.
Even if we just had one more beer, we'd be...
It's going to say we're at like 0.25 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're you know, buyer beware of this podcast. Mm-hmm. We're just going to be ripped by the end.
Yeah, that's just crazy. All right.
Welcome to Bo Schembler, back to our territory.
All right, we're 10 minutes in. Let's talk a little music.
Let's talk a little music. So, Chris.
My scotch here.
So, Chris declared himself the winner already.
Ding, ding, ding.
And, you know, I kind of decided I'm not even going to try to compete on his criteria. I'm going to change the rules.
Mm.
So, you know, what do you do when you're trying to pick a year? I tended to go back to the 80s, and my year probably would have been, if not 84 that Chris picked, maybe like 1987. But we can't have like 1984, 1987.
Did we say what we're doing here?
Come on.
We're picking the year with the best music, and I did 1984 last week.
This is part two in a series.
Part two.
And you can look forward to Barrett's year next week.
Part two, the search for, or the legend of Curly's Gold.
So, you know, I couldn't go with a year too close to your year. I figured I had to pick a different decade.
Sure.
So we could have gone back to the 60s or 70s. You know, can you pick like 2007? No, you can't really do that.
No.
That's not any fun. You got to go back a ways, right? So, okay, my year is 1993. And you know this already because you've seen the title of the podcast, which is probably something like 1993 special. So that's what we're doing.
Special.
Yeah, so I went through these various years, and 93 for me was a good year. So I didn't care if it's a good year for everybody else. It's a good year for me. And I found plenty of music to talk about from 1993. Here's an interesting thing, though. If you go back, now this might be true. Chris, when you went back to, you know, figure out your favorite music and what you wanted to talk about from 1984, did you go like and look at Billboard charts or anything like that?
I looked both at the Billboard charts of the songs, and then I also looked at lists of albums.
Yeah.
So I did. I tried to do everything. It took almost a half hour of research.
Yeah. So here's the thing about 1993. If you go look at the Billboard charts from 93, it's terrible. It is so bad.
No, you're right.
It's horrendous.
93 is, you know, once you get into the 90s, it's starting to be where the song, anything we would listen to, wouldn't make it to the Billboard charts.
Yeah, the singles were filled with stuff that either, you know, I just didn't even know what it was, or I just knew that I didn't like it.
That's the point at which popular music and good music kind of diverged at that point.
Yeah, and there was a lot of Whitney Houston, you know, so I could understand there being one or two Whitney Houston's. I think there were a lot of Whitney Houston songs in the Billboard Top 100. And then I tried to look at the albums, and, you know, it's a lot easier to find lists of singles than albums. Anyway, just suffice it to say it's just terrible. So what I did is I decided that I'm going to go through a lot of the music that I liked in 1993, and then I've got music that kind of other people were listening to in 1993, and it'll give you kind of it'll take you back to 1993.
Yeah, if anything, this is my wheelhouse. This is my sophomore year. I had like three sophomore years in college, so this is one of my sophomore years in college.
Sophomore years.
I gotta say though, if the way that Will is introducing this, say if he was a district attorney and talking about a case this way in front of the jury, not off to a very convincing start.
Yeah,
you're trying to convince the jury that this is a good year in music. Yes, I know. All the music in 1993 was terrible.
Except what? I'm going to boldly state.
Yes, my client was found wearing a bloody shirt.
Right.
But I'm going to boldly state that you will hear some music on this podcast that will convince you that it wasn't such a bad year.
All right. I looked at 93. I did my own research for this because I wanted to be prepared.
Yeah.
And this is my wheelhouse. And I am ready to be convinced because I'm not quite convinced just yet. So
all right.
We'll see.
Let's start with the Juliana Hatfield 3.
She's such
Juliana Hatfield, who had established herself through the band Blake Babies. And then I guess this was her first, what you'd call, solo thing. The Juliana Hatfield 3. I thought that was very catchy.
Yeah, I'll give that one high marks for catchiness and very low marks for lyrics. Those are horrible.
Well,
you are one for one because I absolutely adore that album. That's one of my favorite albums of the era. So, yes, you're off to a great start.
I'm one for one. Are you going to do like a batting average like Barrett did last
week?
Yes,
I'm going to use a lot of baseball analogies like Barrett does.
That's great. Yep. So, yeah, that was a song of the times. Oh, as was this. This is Belly. Belly featuring Tanya Donnelly, who made her name with the band Throwing Muses. Do you guys know there's a new Throwing Muses album?
There's always one.
Yeah, it's on Spotify. It's kind of interesting. It's 32 tracks long.
Wow.
It's a little bit daunting, but it's okay. It's pretty decent, I think. So, yeah.
So far, I'm going to give Will a 2 for 2.
All right.
And I have one observation to make about the two that he's played. I'm going to see if my observation holds up for one more song before I say anything.
Okay.
Every Throwing Muses album, they'd throw like Tanya Donnelly one or two songs, and they were right. Usually all really good. And so finally she broke free, and in 93 formed Belly, and it made her albums. I'm a big Throwing Muses fan. So, yeah.
That album is called Star. And I don't know that the whole album was that great, but that was a highlight for sure.
No, whole album's pretty good. I was a fan of the album.
I saw Belly live once. Did you ever see him?
No, I didn't. I've seen Throwing Muses a few times.
It was a little later, like probably later 90s. But yeah,
right about then, probably 93, I think I saw Throwing Muses in concert after Tanya Donnelly had left. And I was up at the front of the stage and watching Kristen Hirsch. Mm-hmm. I remember just being enamored, just being like, oh, she's so hot.
Yeah, Kristen Hirsch was always pretty cool.
Any woman that could wield an axe like that, I tell you.
Yep. All right, here's one. The band Suede came out with their debut album in 1993. And I thought it was somewhat, I think maybe groundbreaking is going too far. But it was unique, and it was kind of cool, I thought. And they got into I'm going to be getting more into this sort of slightly shoegazy stuff. And this had a little bit of that element to it. So this is the moody ballad from the album that I liked a lot called She's Not Dead. Thank you.
Suede.
Did I follow my pattern or not, Barrett?
You did.
Are you going to tell us what it is?
It is. I am. Yes.
Please, go on.
Without further ado, so far the three songs that Will has picked sound as if the period from, you know, the early, as if the really early 90s had never happened, you know? There's zero influence from
you mean you're saying
Nirvana
it, yeah,
or
the slash rock
any of
yeah.
the Pacific Northwest in any of that, and
it's
for that
early.
I am thankful.
Oh my god!
There's a brawl is coming up for sure.
Yes, Barrett and I are, we're going to drink more scotch and then just fight.
Grunge music.
We're taking our shirts off and we're just going to wrestle 30 style, like
you know
Jack Johnson boxing style.
I like Nirvana and everything, but not and everything. I like Nirvana. Or I did. I don't listen to it anymore. But everything that spawned was bad. And the music itself, just grunge in general, total dead end. Once it was over, it's not like anybody tries to sound like that anymore. Why would you? Because it sounds like garbage. anyway,
wow.
What's number four?
There were definitely, you know, some diverging directions of music, and there this was like the alt rock, not metal style, right from the 90s. That's
right.
What I'm playing here. So, okay, here's another one. Do you guys remember Buffalo Tom? Do you guys ever listen
yes.
to Buffalo Tom?
I remember mm-hmm. Buffalo Tom.
They were like a kind of they had an Americana side to them, right? And they were like alt rock with a little bit of a twanginess to them.
Mm-hmm.
But they kind of sounded, they were from, I think, Boston, but they sounded, there was a little Midwesternness to them, I think.
Hmm. I only know Grant Lee Buffalo's stuff after.
Grant Lee Buffalo?
Yeah.
Anything named Buffalo, right?
This is a really wistful podcast. This is like, this is almost like This American Life now.
Free
like,
association.
Like,
yeah. I'm
somebody will say something and then we all just kind of look at each other.
Yeah.
This
All right.
is more of a think piece.
The Buffalo Tom album, Big Red Letter Day, came out in 1993. It included this song called Would Not Be Denied.
Throat. Yeah. We're alright.
Buffalo Tom. They had a really good run in the 90s, I thought.
Yeah, I was getting them mixed up with Buffalo Springfield.
And Grant Lee Buffalo.
Grant Lee Buffalo. Yeah.
And the Buffalo Sabres.
You should probably mention Avi Buffalo.
Ah, yes.
My favorite album from, what was it, 2010 maybe? They need to put out another album. That's a great band, by the way.
That was a great album. I remember that year we both had them in the top couple.
And, yeah.
Without ever having talked about that fact before. So it was kind of a surprise.
They had three songs on like YouTube demos a few months ago. I thought they sounded really good. So they got to somehow put together an album.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember listening to it on the podcast when you guys did it and liking it. It's just one that I never gave a chance to.
It's hard to, even for us, when we're assigned these things, to really give them all a proper...
Yeah, because it's not like the old days when like there was the album released in a particular week or month that you were supposed to listen to. Now there's like 10 every week.
Yeah.
So, many choices.
And 1993 is right before like the internet age. It's really the last of the...
Right.
If you wanted to listen to an album, you had to go out and buy that album. You had to be convinced enough in a band to go out and buy it, unless a roommate of yours had it or something. So it was kind of the end of innocence, really, Barrett.
<That's right. laughs> Yeah. End of innocence.
It was the end of the internet where people, you heard of bands, you had to read a fanzine or you had to hear of it word of mouth. There weren't listservs and there weren't, Yahoo groups telling you what to listen to.
You had to take a chance on stuff.
Right.
You'd see something, Buffalo Tom. That sounds cool enough for me. I'd go for it.
I remember I spent the summer back here in Wisconsin and I heard of this band from Madison called Garbage.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back to college, I think it was 94, and I went back to Salt Lake City and they had like a little indie record store there. And I went in and I said, yeah, I'm looking for Garbage. And the guy like just looked at me with this look on his face. It's like, what are you talking about? 2 weeks later, it was like the number one album in America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was all word of mouth. It was all just, what you heard from whatever. Now, it's everything. And you just, the problem isn't finding music to listen to. It's, whittling it down to what do I want to listen to?
It's the filtering. Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got another thing now. I got a lot of things here.
And that's Old Guy Minute.
Yep.
The geriatric hour.
This one I'm going to rate the maybe one of the most underrated of everything I'm going to play. This is a really great power pop song, album, and band. It's the Posies. Listen to this. Posies. That's some catchy power pop there.
And they're from Seattle, too, right?
Oh, I was not aware of that.
Oop, we have some microphone shorting.
Uh-oh.
I know they're from the Pacific Northwest.
Well, sounds right.
And
yeah.
At least later, we're kind of noted for being outliers in that scene, not really into the...
Right. They became uncool.
Because the alternative to the alternative.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Right.
What does that make you... That makes you mainstream.
I suppose, yeah.
Either double that or negative. you're
a friend of my enemy is my friend.
Or you're cool for being uncool.
Yeah.
It's whatever.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend. <That's right. laughs> Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The Posies. The album was called Frosting on the Beater. And that was called Solar Sister.
Aside from a couple of these songs, I still feel like you're getting warmed up. I think there are a couple songs on this list as I look at it. I think you're going to hit your stride a little in it, here in a little bit.
See, I'm going to hit...
I did not look at the list.
I'm going to hit my own stride before I hit your stride. So yeah. That's going to be kind of my point here. But okay, so the next song I'm going to play is The Lemonheads. I played this song before, actually, when we did our feature on great guitar solos, because this song has a one-note guitar solo. but I think it's pretty
one
cool.
Hell of a note.
It's called The Great Big No from the album Come On Feel the Lemonheads.
Lover, don't turn your head, just let me walk away. I thought I might have to say you're asking the wrong guy. She wonders how, thinks she knows now. She'll be right, but I'll always go. There's nothing okay to do. There's nothing okay with me. Is anything happening to have to go to sleep? He wonders why the indigo guy will be right.
Lemonheads. By the way, that album came out in 1993. In case you guys were wondering. You know, I'm thinking this is all 1993. So
kind of almost like a theme going.
Yeah.
There is definitely a theme of kind of like pretty good quality power pop, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I believe 91 was It's a Shame About Ray.
Right.
Which
right.
I would say is their best album.
Could be. That.
One of the,
that's
and
right
one of the
there.
Best albums of the 90s, I believe.
The song It's a Shame About Ray is really great. The album, yeah, it's a good album too. This one, really solid too. The Lemonheads. Yeah. All right, we're going to do our first repeat from 1984.
That's right.
Chris had the good discretion to play the Cocteau Twins.
That is a gift to you.
And,
I'm a very giving
what
podcaster.
A guy. What a
I'm
guy.
A generous guy.
So I mentioned last week that I thought that perhaps the Treasure album from 1984 that you played a song from, it arguably is their best album, but I think they had a really nice run of slightly more mainstream but still really solid albums in the 90s. And those would be Bluebell Knoll, I think that was in the late 80s, and then Heaven or Las Vegas, and then this one, Four Calendar Cafe, was sort of the last of their kind of poppy but really good albums. So I'm going to play something here called Bluebeard.
Exploration.
Cocteau Twins. Baird and Chris are giggling here.
We just did our blood alcohol contents.
Yeah. We both have had one drink, and I blew a .23.
I blew a .24.
Yeah. So, like, we're just completely bombed right now.
You got to return this thing. This is clearly, not good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But maybe it wasn't so far off for me, because when I first did it, I sucked in. What do you think would happen if you did that, like, in a test given by a police officer?
I think I got the breathalyzer drunk.
I'm sorry, Ossifer. I gotta blow out.
What if you just dip this thing in the whiskey?
Yeah.
What would
it do?
All right. Cocteau Twins.
Cocteau Twins. There you go. The resurgence.
So the theme so far, if I haven't made it clear, other than the fact that it's 1993,
yeah,
is that I'm kind of telling the people the stuff that I liked in 1993.
Sure.
It might not have been the stuff that everybody else liked, but this is what I liked in 1993. So I've got two left that are really like culminating in like my two favorite things from 1993.
And then you get to the shitty Schneider music.
Then you get to the Schneider stuff. Yeah. Chris is going to have to defend this. He's going to find himself in the uncomfortable position of trying to say how great 1993 was. But not quite as good as 84.
You're the one that nominated
You picked the year. Yeah, I didn't pick the year.
I think that the stuff I picked will stand for the year 1993.
Right,
so
fine.
Saint Etienne had an album called So Tough.
Sure.
And this is I've told you guys this before. I met my wife in 1993, and this is kind of like the theme music. And this is just, I love this album. This album is like, can I get poetic again, Chris?
Please.
This album is like,
as long as you do it in iambic pentameter.
This album,
or a limerick perhaps.
This album makes me think of a big city at night on a rainy summer night. That's what this album sounds like.
Wow.
And it's just great. That's what the album sounds
like. A rainy night in Soho.
Yeah.
That's what that song makes me think of.
I dare you to tell me this is not the case. This is called You're in a Bad Way.
Lose himself. Lose himself in the London.
Sounds good.
It's kind of 60s retro, but it's also Big City at Night in the Rain, I think.
To me, it sounds more sunshiny.
Does it really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
It seems like a song that's, although recorded in 1993, it seems nostalgic for like 1985. So it was like nostalgic for 8 years before.
Mm-hmm.
I think it sounds like it's nostalgic for like 20 or 30 years before, but it's definitely nostalgic.
Could have been on the Pretty in Pink.
The whole album just has this great mood to it. I love it. So there you go, Saint Etienne. All right, now the last of my this series of really my favorite stuff is this band called Catherine Wheel, and this was another in fact, my wife and I danced to this at our wedding reception. This is sort of power dream pop.
This has become like your photo album.
Yeah.
Like we're getting a deep dive into your personal life here.
We are.
Yeah.
So I don't know that Catherine Wheel ever got like really big, but I thought they were super cool. So let's play it. This is called Crank. Catherine Wheel. So if you're inclined to like that at all, go back and listen to that album called Chrome from 1993. It's pretty cool.
Well, I'll say.
What if I'm inclined to go back to your wedding?
Well, I, you know what, Chris? If I could go back in time and invite you to my wedding, I would do so.
Oh, I appreciate that.
But you can't That's go nice. Back, you know?
I can say the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What year did you get married?
95.
Fine. Okay, I got married
in 93. We should all go back in time and invite each other to our weddings. Yeah, be fun. I bet they're all wild times.
I've met Barrett right about the time of mine, yeah.
Yeah?
What,
did you guys have
you,
like
I probably met you in 2001.
2001. I got married in 2001, so yeah.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me to your wedding. After we
I
met,
do what I can.
We like met one time at a bar.
Yeah.
Who should we put on the list? Well, I did meet this guy at a bar. Yeah. His friend is Steven.
Half the people there are people I've met at bars.
He also sort of like Clem Snide. I'll ask Steven what his name is again.
Yeah, what's that guy's name? I think I've asked Barrett about this before, but you didn't have like a DJ playing Twist and Shout at your wedding, did you?
No.
Because you get a demerit point if you had a DJ playing Twist and Shout.
We had a DJ, but...
you probably made him play some good music though, right?
We did. I mean, we tried... We had a, you know, all the big stack of all these things, like, I want you to play this stuff.
Yeah.
And he kind of took a look at it, and he's like, I can play some of that, but trust me, you're going to like, everybody's going to have a better time if I play my stuff.
Yeah, the DJ never wants to let you pick the music.
Yeah. He was kind of right. Like, yeah. The only song I remember for sure...
Did he play Old Time Rock and Roll by Bob Seger?
No, I mean, we had stuff on there like, he can't play that.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that was the...
Was it the DNP list? That,
yeah.
He wouldn't play Godspeed You Black Emperor, like, it's 20 minutes.
But like, Moni, and Dirt. All these things were like, no, you cannot play that.
No.
We did ask him to play the song Oh Deanna, which is on Nick Cave and the Bad Seed, one of their albums. And he's like, so we were kind of waiting all night for that. Didn't play it.
He wouldn't play it, yeah.
But he played all these things that we never would have played, and everybody had a good time.
But it was okay. So. Okay. Well, Chris, what music was played at your wedding reception?
Let's see. It was a DJ, and it was a very specific list. A
lot of Soundgarden.
I recall my watching my like 85-year-old grandmother dance to the Humpty Dance by Digital Underground.
Wow.
But yeah, like our... let's see. These are things I should probably remember, huh?
No.
Our like first like couple dance was to REM's At My Most Beautiful.
Well, that's very good. Sweet.
Which is very good. Nice. It was one of their love songs, so it was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. That's good. Wedding report.
Wedding report.
That's right.
You know, every wedding I go to now, like, the first song is Etta James singing At Last, which I liked a long time. You know that? Have you guys been to a wedding recently?
You still know some young people.
I mean, these are like my nieces and stuff.
I was at, like, friends. I was like
but.
At a 10-minute wedding ceremony for a daughter of a good friend of mine like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like 10 minutes, right? And then it probably has been 5 or 10 years before that since I've been to a wedding. I was on this big string of a ton of weddings and then...
When you're in your late 20s, all your friends are getting married, and so you just, like, you bang them all out in a few years.
I got to go to fun places and stuff. Those were fun times, actually.
And then there's, like, another 10 years pass, and then all your friends get remarried.
Yeah. When I get remarried, I'm going to totally invite you guys.
Awesome! Yes!
Let's do, like, we'll do a podcast of it.
Yeah.
Is that cool? Are we still going to be doing a podcast in, like, a year or two?
My God, you gotta cut
when
this.
When Derek gets remarried. Yeah.
My wife never listens to this podcast.
This is like daring her to listen to it right now, right? You're just daring her.
Yeah, and if she calls me on it, I just say I blew a .27 on the BAC, so I was obviously out of my mind.
Yeah, you weren't thinking at all.
I feel like this is like a quiver, like an arrow in your quiver, like if you ever get in an argument. Well, you never listen to my podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
You just throw it out just to wound her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know? One more thing about the BAC thing.
Yes, please.
What if we had this 2 years ago during the Christmas podcast? Ooh, they flew into it there.
0.85.
Yeah, that would have been...
It would have been like 0.99. Like
the thing would have... Yeah, there would have been like some...
higher.
Right, some kind of alarm would have gone off or something. Yeah.
There's like a direct... Yeah, there's like a... It goes over a certain level and it's like...
Unless when it says 0.26, it means operator. Like 0.026. That seems like it would make sense.
I mean, that's probably about what we are.
It makes more sense. You know? It does actually make more sense if you just took one decimal off it. It's a little ridiculous, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe that is what it is.
I don't think so. I think it's just really off. Okay.
Yes.
We can debate that later.
1993.
So we're going to go into, I'm going to have to, you know, Chris, look at the timer. I mean, you reached a point where you had to start speeding up. We got to start speeding up here. I'm going to go now to just like some sounds of the year 1993. And I kind of like these to varying degrees. So maybe we can have a little debate.
I'm just going to let it wash over me.
Yeah, okay.
These are my years. These are my jams.
The Breeders.
Ooh.
Breeders, Cannonball from the Last Splash album. Yeah, now, I'm not sure.
That's a great one.
I'm not sure that whole album was that great, but that song was definitely great.
It sure was.
That album was very good, yes.
You know, they're coming to the High Noon and they're going to perform that.
Really?
And I'm going. You know why I'm going?
Why are you going?
Grant demanded that we go because the opening band is Speedy Ortiz.
Oh.
So we're going to go.
What do you know?
It's like in a month or something.
Yeah. Kim and Kelly Deal.
Yeah, Kim from the Pixies, from Kelly, her sister. Are they twins?
They are twin sisters, correct.
And they're rockers.
It was a,
Drug addicts, too.
to some extent to yes. various times. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
But, to a great extent. But yeah,
it would be a good show. I saw them 3 years ago at the Majestic, and it was fantastic.
Really? With mm-hmm. who?
With my friend Sarah.
Oh, I wasn't asking who you were with, but like, oh, with did who? They play like who's...
Who opened up for them?
They were the headliners? I thought they might have been.
No, they were the headliners. I think... you know, you know who opened up for him is, what are they called? Portugal the Man. Yuck.
I went to the 1994 Lollapalooza in Las Vegas, and it was the first Lollapalooza that year, and it was the Breeders. Nirvana was supposed to play it, but they had that little unfortunate incident where Kurt Cobain killed himself.
That prevented him from appearing that evening.
Yes, it was the Breeders. It was
the Packers still played on Sunday, even though Aaron Rodgers is hurt. He couldn't play. Come on.
Nirvana could have picked the up a guy off must the go on. Waiver wire.
Next,
or something.
Next man up.
How dare you?
Don't they have a practice squad?
This is blasphemy. You're making fun of a year of my life where I was inconsolable.
Come on, Barrett. Have a little respect for Chris.
Inconsolate?
Inconsolable.
Inconsolable.
Like, I remember I was like, wow, that's weird. He killed himself. I remember where I was, too. I was at a Radio Shack. It was in April, right?
April 6th or 7th.
Because
one of those days.
Baseball season had just started. And again, this was before the internet. So...
We just got a sample of the next song.
So we have
a little preview.
Radiohead coming up here, but... It was before the internet, so it's like, how do I listen to the Brewer games in Chicago? So I was like, I'll go to Radio Shack. They must have some kind of like geek radio thing.
Like a ham radio?
You're like trying to get something.
So Barrett walks into a Radio Shack and says, tell me how I can get the Brewer game.
Yeah, and then they had it like on the radio, playing the radio singles. There.
Yeah.
And I was like, they're like, Kurt Cobain has killed himself.
Well, there was like month before where there was a scare, like he was in Europe and they thought he had died, but they revived him.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a coma.
But, and I'm taking that you were actually really, that made you really sad. Like you were really sad for a long time.
I wasn't surprised because of the fact that everybody thought he was dead a couple months before.
Right.
So it wasn't a surprise because he kind of always... But I was very sad, yeah. I was really bummed. I had a lot of pictures of him on my wall and such. So I was 21 years old.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, something else happened in 1993. Got to keep you guys on task here. This band called Radiohead came out with their first album.
I've heard of them.
Yeah. And their first album was called Pablo Honey. And this was the first song that got substantial U.S. radio airplay. Called Creep.
Song that they've declared they will never play again live.
Is that because they don't like it, or what is it?
I don't know.
You know, I'll say this, and Chris, you can rebut this if you want.
I'd be happy to.
I think that that's just sort of an okay song. It's not really that great, and I think they could have gone just faded into obscurity after that. Instead, they were just scratching the surface of what they were capable of. It's kind of like a, let's make another sports analogy, right? Like a guy has one good season and he could kind of like, that could just be it. Or he could be like just, you know, starting to show his potential.
Right.
And
so he could either be like Pat Listash.
Yes.
Rookie of
one
the year.
Good season and go
exactly.
away.
Exactly.
Or have some staying power.
Right.
Like
so
Gene
I think
Segura
it's.
Segura is going to have.
I think it's, you know, I thought that was kind of unremarkable, but in, you know, now historically, it's like. It's like this was the beginning of a great band.
I think it's a pretty good song. And what if you had taken like fake plastic trees from the Bends and swapped it on Pablo Honey? Would Creep stand out as like this big, you know, crap song on the Bends? No. It
I don't
fit
know.
Right in.
I guess it would
fit right in.
I think this was just radio friendly at the time.
Yeah, I don't.
It's funny.
Wrong with this song at all.
They were a guitar band at this time, though, which is weird, right? Because
yeah, on the Bends too.
Yeah. Are you waiting for me to weigh in?
All right, go ahead, Chris. Mm-hmm. We're ready for you.
All right, so you know, at the time, it was a big. You know, obviously, there was a huge alternative music scene, just kind of churning out bands at the time, and Radiohead just kind of seemed like one of those bands. Like it was one of dozens of bands that was just coming out with those types of songs at the time. And then, you know, a couple of years ago, the Bends came out, and it was like, whoa, wait a minute. This band's, like, got a totally different gear. And that's when people started to realize that, you know, they weren't a one-hit wonder.
Yep.
But, you know, at the time, like, you're sitting around your Radiohead, you're like, what kind of music do we have to make to get noticed at this, you know, at the time? You know, that's kind of the music that was popular at the time, and it certainly worked. They yep. did it. That was a good song. It got them noticed. And then they took it from there. So, you know, I don't fault them. And I do look back at Radiohead Honey, or Pablo Honey, and you listen to it and you're like, this is a pretty good album. Like, front to back, it's pretty good in retrospect. I think it's undervalued.
I haven't listened to it in a long time.
I think it's undervalued.
It's clearly their worst.
Well, yeah, but there's songs like, you know, Everyone Can Play Guitar, and there's, you know, other songs that are really good on there. Obviously, the talent was there, and they... You know, in retrospect, they showed it. So,
but isn't that neat to see a band really that like gets better with each album? I mean, so many bands now, it's like the first album has the big spark, and they're trying to hold it together after that. You know,
what if they had never? You were being so totally hypothetical again, but what if they had never recorded this song until like In Rainbows, and this appeared on there? People would be like, "Oh my God, a return to form! I can't believe how awesome that is." They would.
Yeah. Well, it's possible. I mean, it's all
part
it's
all
of the
context.
Yep. All right. I'm gonna only play a little bit. This is A Sound of the 90s and the Cranberries. I don't think this really wore that well, but here, this is what the 90s sounded like. The Cranberries. Okay, I don't feel like playing any more of that.
Disagree. Wildly undervalued.
You think so? You know...
That whole album is very good.
Irish band, Cranberries.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what it is, but I guess I just haven't really wanted to go back and listen to it. It's one of those things that, for me, didn't have a lot of staying power. It was a very catchy album. I liked it quite a bit
Zombies
at the time.
Zombies on that album. A lot of good songs on that album.
Yep. Yeah.
So we're going to get to an album here. I see on your list that I'm going to argue is overvalued, but we're going to go
this is the next three are like the real 90s that Barrett's going to not want to hear. There's this band called Nirvana.
Hey, I've heard of them.
Thank you.
All right, I'll just let Barrett have his say. Go ahead.
Your turn.
That was In Utero. That's the album.
No, yeah. I like that fine. But
all apologies. Yeah. That, you know, that is probably my favorite song from that album. And I can't find, like, more than three or four that I'd be like, oh, these are really good songs. Mm. You know, I just
disagree with you.
I wanted to like this album, but I just didn't really get into it that much. Mm. So, all right, Chris. It's all
yeah,
yours.
I love every second of this album. I mean, it just seems like a long time ago where a number one album in America could have lyrics like doll steak, test meat, and things like that, and just screaming, and the song Tourette's, which is just completely incomprehensible. I yearn for those days where bands were actually serious.
Boy, you couldn't have a number one album. Was this a number one album?
I believe it was it came out.
Yeah, to have been.
Gotta admire that. Now, did Steve Albini end up actually producing this?
Yes,
I sent you guys that link to that letter. I mean, that's a really fun thing to read if you're music geeks. Just do a Google search for Nirvana Steve Albini letter, and there's this letter that Steve Albini, who lived in my dorm at Northwestern, wrote to Nirvana, you know, outlining his terms if he were to produce their album. It's fascinating, I think. It's interesting.
Yes.
So read that.
Yep. So I think this is a...
Chris would have had this earlier on in the list than I did.
Yeah, you know, if you're talking about, like, as the assignment was, the greatest years of American music, this would be, you know, in your three or four iconic albums. And I realized in last week's, I went back and I listened to last week's podcast, and I used the word iconic like 50 times.
That's the theme.
So I apologize for that. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking at like the titans of the year, this would be one of the albums.
All right, let's see if Chris considers this iconic, Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam, the song is Daughter, one of the more popular songs from their album Versus from 1993. Now, there was a time that Nirvana and Pearl Jam were sort of contemporary competitors for, you know, the hot rock and roll band of the time, right? And Nirvana kind of won the competition, don't you think? But there was a time that they were like, okay, these are the two big hot 90s bands.
Well, it depends on what you define as success. You know, Eddie Vedder has had a 20-year career.
And the other guy's dead.
Has a ton of money, and the other guy's dead. He's more than a 20-year career, 20 whatever.
Yeah.
4 years.
Yeah.
But when Kurt Cobain died, I don't know if people remember this. This is my recollection. Nirvana had actually kind of fallen behind Pearl Jam a little bit. And it was Kurt Cobain's death that really catapulted Nirvana back above Pearl Jam. And kind of, you know, Pearl Jam had nowhere to go.
It could be.
But down from there. Like, you know what I mean? They were more popular than Nirvana was.
I think that's absolutely right, actually. I think, with In Utero, which we just talked about, was really experimental. And Pearl Jam Versus came out. And a lot of people, you know, they praise it as Pearl Jam's greatest album. I don't think it's even close. I mean, I think those are just people who are trying to be contrarian. But Yeah, I think Kurt Cobain killing himself kind of launched them more into the public consciousness, and you know, they were granted, you know, kind of the goodwill that comes with somebody killing themselves.
What if in April of 93, Eddie Vedder killed himself?
Yeah.
When Pearl Jam was more popular than Nirvana, and Kurt Cobain was the guy that's sticking around and is 48 years old,
yeah,
making albums that nobody cares about.
And Nirvana hit.
Do you think that people should be like, oh my God, that Nirvana album is one of the top 10 of all time? No, give me a break. It's not even close. And that's the only reason is because he killed himself.
That I disagree with. I think Nevermind stands on its own as one of the... I mean, it changed... I mean, you realize, like, the late 80s, it was all hair metal and all that stuff, and Nevermind came along, and it was just... It completely changed everything.
Yeah, I do think that Smells Like Teen Spirit video, you know, that's...
Sure, changed everything.
I'll call it iconic. Not... I mean, that would have been out there.
That,
you know.
That being said, though, I mean, Nirvana hated Pearl Jam, and Kurt Cobain went out of his way to trash them any time he could. And when he killed himself, Eddie Vedder could not have been more gracious, and I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. I mean, he seems like a really good guy. Like, he was like he let all that go under the bridge, and you know, he kind of embraced the fact that you know, he's like, yeah, Nirvana's a great band, and blah, blah, blah. He didn't let any of it get to him. So, you know, I give him credit for that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the albums they've made lately have been awful. I mean, I generally give bands like three albums, and then I think it just kind of runs its course. So, yeah.
All right. I think this next band I would put in the category of the other two. I think it's like a group of three, right? Tell me if you guys agree.
All right.
You got Nirvana. You got Pearl Jam, and you've got, for some reason, I always want to call them Smashing Pumpkins, but they always want to call themselves The Smashing Pumpkins. So I don't know. This is them. Billy Corgan and his band, Smashing Pumpkins. You know, I'll let Chris take over because you probably have something better to say about Smashing Pumpkins. I think that there's something about their sound to me that's just sort of fingernails on a chalkboard. You know, his voice is so grating and the guitars are so just... It's like they're daring you to like it. And I just... I recognize that he... has written a lot of good stuff, not only of his own stuff, but other people's, like the, supposedly he wrote like most of the Celebrity Skin album by Hole, being buddies with Courtney Love. I don't know if that's a good thing or not. And he's done production and stuff. He's done tons of great stuff, but I've never been able to really immerse myself and like really love a Smashing Pumpkins album.
Yeah, so. I mean.
But that's certainly a sound of the 90s for sure. Yeah. And then, you know, I can listen to that. That's a good catchy song.
I like Smashing Pumpkins singles. So like whenever they do a re-release, oh, this is the 20th anniversary of whatever, Infinite Sadness or whatever.
Melancholy.
And be like, yeah. Oh, I'm going to listen to that. And then I'll be like, nah, I guess I'm wrong. I don't like the Smashing Pumpkins. I only like a few of their singles. So... But, you know, I mean, I'm not the guy to talk to about the 90s.
Yeah. I think Chris is disappointed in us.
I don't like a lot of the 90s music.
Well, as soon as you said you were doing 1993, the first thing that popped in my head is like, oh, that was Siamese Dream year. That was like... I have a friend who had a blog who was talking... at some point, he was doing like a forum on what are the songs with the best intros. And he almost had to do songs with the best intros other than the Smashing Pumpkins Cherub Rock.
Yeah.
Because it's so great. The first song on this album.
That is good.
Just like the 2 minutes of just where it builds and builds and builds. And I love this album from beginning to end. And, you know, when I drove across country, it was good. I mean, it's a long album. It's like the full 72 minutes that CDs at the time allowed you. And it was always my go-to album when I needed to burn an hour and 12 minutes. I was never really big into the next album, which was Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness. It had a good couple songs like Bullet with Butterfly Wings and such. But I think this is probably their high point. I like Gish a lot, which was from 91, which I might argue was probably, no offense, I think that was probably the better year. But I think this is the album of 1993.
Wow.
Indeed.
All right. So, you know,
Were you living in Chicago in 93? Were you there with the Pumpkins at the time?
You know what? Actually, yeah. We lived on Addison and Jansen. He lived on Addison and whatever, like two blocks to the west.
But you know where he lived?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we were driving by one time and there's a big banner, you know, like they would put out at outside of a bar, like, welcome, you know, Badger fans or something. Big thing on the L tracks. But it was, I guess, whatever. I don't know how old he was, but for his birthday. Nice. Like, oh, yeah, this guy in the Smashing Pumpkins. I didn't care at all about them. I mean, when we first moved there, they were always playing at this place. I can't remember what it was, but just this stupid little bar. And, you know, the Chicago equivalent of the Isthmus. So, like, their, you know, alternative weekly. There's always had ads like, oh, this band Smashing Pumpkins is playing at this thing. And, like, who gives a shit? And nobody did. And all of a sudden, bam.
They're the biggest band in America.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw them at the Ratskeller at the Memorial Union here. Wow. And and I thought, yeah, you know, they're okay.
I remember thinking it was just a terrible band name.
It is.
I think it's okay.
But you grow into it, I guess.
All right. We got to move along here. I've got two more things. One is an album that I never listened to, and everybody says, wow, this is a great album. So I went back and I kind of sampled it and I thought, you know, maybe there was something to this. Maybe this was a decent album. Maybe somebody out there, I don't know about Chris, you're going to tell me. Did anybody out there listen to the Liz Phair album?
It is a great album.
Exile in Guyville? I never listened to this album. So let's sample something. It's called Divorce Song.
Shouldn't try to mix the two, 'cause if you do it and you're still unhappy, then you know that the problem is you. And it's true that I stole your lighter, and it's also true that I lost the map. But when you said that I wasn't worth talking to, I had to take your word on that. But if you it up and buried it in the ground, boxed it up and buried it in
That's Liz Phair from an album that I never listened to called Exile in Guyville. And apparently Chris thinks I should have listened to it. Should I have?
Yeah, I think that's I think it's a great album. It's one of the dare I say iconic albums of the of the year. And in 1984, I think, you know, three of my top five bands I think were from Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to be a big year for Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
1993, Liz Phair's from Chicago as well. And I mean, we all have the benefit of looking in retrospect at Liz Phair's career. And she's obviously kind of petered out in the last few years. She did one
in
album
the last
that was
19 years.
Yes, it's like, yeah, she she's done some pretty questionable stuff. A few years ago, she put out a pretty terrible album. But you know, at the time, this album came out, and it was you know, the big female empowerment album.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, big riot girl type of stuff. But you know, it was like right. Great,
kind of coinciding with that time.
Yeah, right around that time, and. You know, you mentioned a couple other bands, you know, Juliana Hatfield and Belly and other stuff. So it was a big, big year for female artists, and I think she was probably at the front of all that.
Yeah, well, you know, when I went back and sampled some of this, I thought this might have been an album worth listening to, but I just never got around to it. So I can't say anything real definitive one way or the other about it, other than, yeah, it's a classic. To my intellectual knowledge, but not that I haven't listened to it.
No.
Speaking of female empowerment, can I just mention, like, two bad female empowerment artists? I totally did not like Alanis Morissette. What do you guys think? That just grated on me.
Indifference.
When did that huge monster album by Alanis Morissette come out? It wasn't 93, because I would have found it. It's mid-90s sometime.
When was Alanis Morissette? Yeah, that was 94, 95, something
yeah,
like that.
I think so. Yeah. And then there was this huge album by Indigo Girls, and I'm just like, oh my God, that wore on me. Like, they did this thing with Michael Stipe, right? And it was like, I considered it cool for about 1 month, and then I totally, like, lost it and thought, this is just not good.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff. There's, like, also Joan Osborne around that time.
Yeah, and, yeah.
Who's the other one that does the commercials with the sad puppies that were, you know,
Sarah McLachlan came out that year. Yeah. Like one of her first ones. Let me just throw out there that I did a little research on my own.
You just Googled vagina rock.
Yes.
Can I say that on a podcast?
Bikini Kill's Pussy Whipped came out that year. That was a big indie hit.
Is this what I overlooked in 93, Chris?
Yes.
Chris is going to fill in now all the stuff that I missed.
Velocity Girls Copacetic.
Oh, it was good.
Came out
yeah.
That year. That's
I like
another,
that one, yeah.
That's another big one.
Yep.
Let's see. Bjork's debut, which I believe I just mentioned a couple podcasts ago. I mentioned my Bjork.
Right.
My love of Bjork. So that was another big album that year. So yeah, big year. And I'll mention some other ones in a little bit, but. Yeah, big year for the ladies.
Okay, in a little bit, you don't have much time left, because I'm only going to play one more thing.
Oh, all right.
And that is...
I should also mention, 1993, PJ Harvey's Rid of Me.
Right.
With 50-Foot Queenie, which was the indie hit, one of the indie hits of the year.
And the reason I didn't bring that up is because I didn't discover PJ Harvey until later.
Yeah.
And I thought she was great.
PJ Harvey was the gold standard for, like, the, you know, the lady crowd.
And it's gloomy, which is totally cool.
Yeah.
You got to love that.
50-Foot Queenie is an awesome song.
All right, so this guy named Beck Hansen, aka Beck, released a single in 1993 called Loser. And this was kind of became a hit. Now, Chris aptly pointed out that the album, Mellow Gold, was released in 1994. But the single came out in 93. Yeah. So I'm calling it 93. Beck.
Vitamin D.
All right, that's Beck. Yeah, there you go. That's 1993 for you. Except that maybe Chris has more to add. But that's all I've got. That's I have just summed up my 1993 for you.
Outstanding.
Yeah, you know.
Barrett's underwhelmed.
It's like a blind spot for me, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's some things I liked, and I bought some albums in that year, but I don't know. I wasn't...
You were busy following Rod Blagojevich around Chicago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. That was a little pre-Rod Blagojevich.
Well, I have to say that when I went back and looked at this, I couldn't really make an argument of, like, you know, great albums of all time from 1993. But I did kind of surprise myself that there was a lot of music that I really liked from 1993. It may not have been the top-selling stuff. Definitely it wasn't the Billboard charts. But,
you know, it's just kind of fun to go back and look at a year. Like, you know, I don't know what I thought about 1993 in music before exactly, but my opinion is a little better than it was, you know, when I rang your doorbell to come in here and do this podcast.
Yeah, so maybe we'll in the future we'll just like flip a coin or do some kind of random number generator. We'll just make a year. We'll be like, you know, let's go with like 1979.
Yeah.
Well, like we'll talk about the Knack or something.
Well, I should mention that I did get a couple internet comments on 1984. People upset that I didn't pick 1980.
1980,
which was a big, that was a big year.
Yeah,
it was
like that's when The River came out, and when, that's when London Calling came out.
Was it? Yeah.
You know, you can...
A lot of big transitional years where things just, like, styles of music just broke, and I think 79, 80, around there, it was one of those years.
King's The Wild Frontier by Adam and the Ants, one of the classics.
I think we've touched on this to some extent, but I think also it's, a lot of it's just the timing that... If you are at the age, if you're like 19 or 20, and you are just completely soaking in stuff,
yeah,
then, you know, those years are going to have more significance to you, I think. You know, so some of this is just like,
for
well,
sure.
I was the wrong age in a certain year, you know. I was the wrong age in 1993 to totally absorb myself in the Smashing Pumpkins album, drive across the country and play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I would say...
So what else did I miss, Chris? Tell me what else I missed.
Oh, let me break out my list.
You've pull out the list, yeah.
Well, there's obviously the Wu-Tang Clan.
I don't even know what that is. I hear that name. I don't even know what it is.
It just, you know, it was a rap album that came out. Wu-Tang Clan spawned a great number of big stars later. But I think, you know, just within the last week, people are paying tribute to its 20th anniversary. I mentioned Bjork came out that year, debut.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Snoop Doggy Dogg's Doggy Style, which, you know, whether it's on your list or not, that was a huge cultural album of the year. Snoop Doggy Dogg making his first album. He had appeared on some Dr. Dre stuff before, but that was really his coming out party, and he's still a huge cultural figure today. Let's see. The Flaming Lips, Transmissions from the Satellite Heart,
mm-hmm.
came out that year. Cypress Hill's Black Sunday came out, another rap album.
Yeah, and Where You Been by Dinosaur Jr., which is, that's one thing I got way into that year.
Yeah?
So, wasn't totally out of touch. That album is amazing.
And if I have one personal pick, the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones had an album that year, and they're not the greatest band of all time, but I used to love going to their shows and doing, you know, mosh pitting and like jumping on the stage and running off and diving into the crowd and stuff. And that was always a great time.
And I've never seen a picture of you with your long hair and stuff.
I had long hair and then I shaved it bald and I looked like a giant thumb. It was
you
awful.
Did? I just,
yeah.
I can't. I just don't.
Like the
you've
date.
Had like this, just like.
Yeah.
Dude haircut, like the, since I've known you, just right, regular guy haircut.
The day before I went to a Mighty Mighty Boss Tones show, it was like I went to go see Soundgarden right after Chris Cornell shaved like all of his long hair, and I'm like, that looked awesome, so I just shaved my head bald, and I looked awful. It looked pathetic, and then like a couple days later, I went to a Mighty Mighty Boss Tones show and showed it off to all the skinheads there, so yeah, it was great. me as a 20-year-old.
Did you? Wow. Is there photographic evidence of these things? Because I've I've never seen you with the,
yeah,
like,
not
a picture of you.
Not of the long hair. I think there's evidence of the short hair somewhere.
Mm. Yeah, I'd like to see the heavy metal Chris. That'd be cool. Chris at the Guns N' Roses show, you know.
Sure.
His long hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Pretty that's exciting, that's yeah. That's 1993. I hope I did it justice. It may not have, you know, matched 84. It may not match Barrett's legendary year.
My year, yeah, I think, is going to be
it's
the best.
Kick our ass.
But it's also going to be the least, you know, it might make you say, oh, wow, all those songs came out that year. But they're kind of familiar songs, and, you know.
No,
so I'm just going to give them one clue. It's not 2007.
No.
I've looked at the list of the albums from your year, and 1 through 10, it's just like, which of these albums is not legendary?
Yeah.
Like, which of these albums is not, so to speak, iconic, as mm-hmm. I love to say. Yeah.
So I'll try to pick deeper cuts off of these things just to...
No, pick the songs everybody knows.
We want to hear the hits, mm-hmm. man.
Yeah, we want to hear the hits.
Maybe we can do
Show us your hits.
You sound like me at the 38th Special concert.
Well, Barrett is...
Play the hits, man.
Barrett's the true journalist here, so you got to show your journalism cred here.
Well, Chris is the one that works at the newspaper.
Aside from the guy that writes for the biggest paper in Wisconsin.
I totally dissed Chris just now. I'm like, Barrett's the journalist. Wait a minute.
He owns
a
coffee shop.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. I apologize.
In fairness, though, I did write for a long time.
No, that's, yes.
But I've retired.
Right.
I'm kind of like, pass the torch.
Yeah.
On to Chris.
Yeah, pass it to Chris. All right.
You're like Salinger. You've just gone into retreat. Right.
Exactly.
Living a curious lifestyle.
Hey, there's like a new Salinger book that they're putting together.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Like he said, after X years after I die or whatever, release these books. Like, holy shit.
Mark Twain did that. He was like, 100 years after my death, you can release my autobiography.
You know how long we've been going, you guys? It's like, it's going to like blow up my hard drive pretty soon. So
all right, let's keep moving off.
So we think we'll be back next week with Barrett's incredible whatever year it's going to be. And so let's say goodnight. We'll talk to you again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
Hasta luego.
You can contact this podcast by sending an email to willsband@yahoo.com or by posting a comment on the webpage willsband.net. You can also contact us through the Will's Band of the Week Facebook page or on Twitter @willsband. You can also, of course, download the podcast on iTunes, the Stitcher app, or any other podcasting app. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin.